Now stay tuned for To Your Health on WPBC LP Charlottesville, the show where food is on the table and center stage. To Your Health is brought to you by Hamilton's at First and Main, celebrating 20 years of sustainable fine dining on the downtown mall. Now here's your host, MC Blair.
Hey, good morning, good morning. Good Saturday morning to you. This is MC Blair, and I'm with my co-host, Michael Riley.
Good morning, everyone.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, I guess that mic works. Gee, we might even get by without any technical problems this morning.
That'd be awesome.
That would be awesome, right? And we're going to talk about the true cost of food. I had a couple of interviews this morning at City Market that Daniel Klein and Matt Rohde. That was pretty good. So we're gonna play those for you to start off, and then we're gonna get right into it. I know this is a subject that's near and dear to your heart, Michael.
It is. It is very much so.
All right, so let's, without further ado, get this thing playing.
MC Blair here at the City Market. Once again, I am talking with Daniel Klein from Farfield's Farm out in Afton. And true to our subject today, the true cost of food. Daniel, can you talk to me a little bit about that?
Sure. So one of the questions we get at the market is, how do we price our eggs? And $5, $5.50 tends to get a strange reaction sometimes when people are used to looking at $2 a dozen, $3 a dozen in the grocery store. So, you know, we try to explain that for the quality of the feed that we get and the quality of the animals that we have, that's the cost of food. And I think we're, in America, we're very used to food being lower than the actual cost. The price and cost are two different things, and the price of humanely raised beef may be higher, but I think that it actually represents the true cost environmentally and socially and economically.
And if you took the subsidies away from the factory farms, that all of a sudden a conventional would go through the roof, right?
Exactly. Plus, you know, to be a small-scale farmer, the economies of scale that a larger industrial production is, you know, enjoys, we don't have. But also, you know, we don't have the costs, the environmental costs of raising cattle and producing a way too much manure or using pesticide-covered corn. We're not feeding our animals corn at all. So when you think about the price and the food of cost, price and cost of food, you know, a lot of it is borne out in other things. You know, there's hidden costs to mass-produce food, like healthcare costs and environmental costs and all these things that, you know, we don't have to factor into our price because we're not contributing to those. So the price and the cost are two different things, and that's one thing that we try to explain to folks.
That well said, Daniel. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
All right. I'm with my friend Matt Rohde of Carpe Donut and Carpe Cafe down at the X Park, and we are talking today. Mr. Matt, how are you, first off?
Oh, I'm very well. 5 a.m. wake-up call never leaves me at my most scintillating, but I'm happy to chat with you.
Yeah. And then usually during the week, I'm up at 4:20, so I can get to the station and do my morning show.
Mike, I don't think you should say 4:20 on the radio.
Oh, okay, 4:20?
4:21, 4:26, something.
Something other than 4:20? Okay, no problem. So, Matt, our subject today is the true cost of food. I know you have a little something to say about that.
Oh, yeah.
You're on.
Well, I mean, the place you have to start, which is really counterintuitive, is that we pay way too little for food. I think as an absolute share of total income, we pay less and less for food year over year, going back like 50 or 60 years.
That's true. And it used to be 30% of our income.
Yeah, something that's now approaching somewhere under 20%.
Yeah.
And the reality is that that's because the food in that 20% is adulterated. It is, you know, subsidized through industry. And I don't really want industry involved in my food manufacturing.
Agreed.
as much as I'd like people and farms and animals and the ecosystem. And that would just cost more.
Yeah, it would. I've been doing some research and found out that casein, the dairy protein, is being added to all sorts of processed food because it goes right to the opioid receptors and addicts us.
All right. Well, I'll tell you, that's that thing on casein is absolutely true. They've been doing that for a number of years. They found out that casomorphine is actually the technical name for the casein. it does go to the opioid receptors in our brain, and it does serve to addict us. That's why it's hard to give up cheese. Well, I'll tell you, Michael, they started adding this, much like the cigarette companies adding more nicotine, and of course they were found guilty and had to pay billions, thank goodness. And the food companies are doing the same thing with casein, because they know they put it, it's a thickener, and they know that since it does stimulate the opioid receptors in our brain, that we will become addicted to whatever it is that casein is added to. So that's one of the other costs of food that we don't know about.
Oh yeah.
So what have you got?
Well, MC, this is really a subject matter that, as you mentioned, really sort of strikes a chord with me. I'm fascinated by it, and I think it is truly one of the most, important issues of our day in terms of the issues that are around food and other issues and concerns connected to food, climate change, environmental destruction, poverty, malnutrition, hunger, all these things seems counterintuitive, or I guess maybe the word is, it seems obvious that hunger would be connected to food, but so often we don't make the direct connection between hunger and our food system as it exists worldwide. But when we really talk about this true cost of food, I think the most appropriate term is true cost accounting.
Accountability, exactly.
Yeah, and accounting, anytime you mention the word accounting to most people, no offense to CPAs out there, you know, their eyes glaze over, and I'm one of those. Certainly accounting is not my forte or anything like that, but it really is critical that we take a look. You know, Matt mentioned, you know, we should be paying more for food, and that's sort of the, you know, sort of the easy way to present it, but the real true way to look at it is we should be paying the accurate, and I think Daniel alluded to this, we should be paying the amount that food costs to produce. And so we have this system in this world, particularly in our country, an industrialized food system that on the face of it is presented as being a cheap food system, low production costs, high yield, high production value. We can feed a lot of people, and it's this great system that's going to feed the world of this growing population that's predicted to reach 9 billion people, I guess, by the middle of this century. What is not accounted for in that system is what we call the external costs. Mm-hmm. And there's no other system like this in the world when we look at the way we produce things. I mean, like, you look at producing a computer, okay? I'm staring at the computer here on the desk. And you look at a company that produces a computer, they're going to sell it for the amount of – they have to sell it above the amount of costs that are factored in.
Of course.
And, you know, the parts, the components, the labor, and all that. When it comes to our industrial food system – we are not factoring in some significant costs, and it's a pretty long list, but the biggest one is certainly the health care that is the result of this system. And there are a lot of deniers out there, but I think a lot of people now really are starting to wake up to the fact that many of the problems that we are suffering from in terms of our health, chronic disease, autoimmune disease, are directly tied to what we eat.
And it's very true.
Dysfunction of our digestive tract, otherwise known for short as the gut. And so that's a huge problem. We just spend billions of dollars worldwide treating chronic disease, autoimmune disease, and obesity. Worldwide obesity is so costly. And
it is. I was just going to say the excess weight and obesity cost $2 trillion globally in health care costs. Just obesity and type 2 diabetes. Unbelievable.
Yeah. Without a doubt. I mean, those are huge factors there.
That's definitely part of the cost of food, especially and that's the factory food system.
Without a doubt, yeah. And then next behind that is the environmental cost. So the environmental cost, which maybe is a little easier, not easier, but maybe a little bit more tangible to put our arms around, because, we could look at what it's costing, what it costs to clean up the mess that is often left behind from factory farming in terms of runoff from pesticides to you know, the CAFO industry is rife with all sorts of environmental effluents and hazards that toxins that are just require constant cleanup, and that all comes from through the most of it through the EPA and is funded through taxpayer dollars.
Right, and
it's a cost to us.
It is. It is. We had a situation in Virginia Beach where Back Bay, known as one of the premier bass fishing areas in the world. I mean, all these shows would come in with these professional bass fishermen. Well, that shut down due to the runoff from some hog farms and some big corn producers down there. And so all that nitrogen runs into Back Bay, and all of a sudden you've got these huge algae blooms, and it's just not conducive for that beautiful bass, that just a wonderful sport fish. And so they dried up, and the ecosystem was almost dead at Back Bay. Well, as you probably remember, for 35 years there's been, or even more, this conservatory down there, the Back Bay, reclamation, if you will. And through legislation and constant peer pressure and everything they needed to do, they got all that cleaned up, and now over the last 8 to 10 years or so, Back Bay's coming back, the bass are coming back, the algae blooms are going down, and it's starting to to come. So we do have the ability to not only pollute things, we also have the ability to clean them up.
Which took a long time. Yeah, the environmental cleanup, environmental issue becomes most, prevalent in the wake of a natural disaster. And one prime example was last year Hurricane Matthew that went through North Carolina, which is a state where there's quite a bit of confined pigs. Smithfield, which is now a Chinese-owned company, has quite a few facilities there. And the flooding caused by Hurricane Matthew flooded out some of these CAFO farms, and it was really just a mess. And the cleanup ran into the millions, and
I know.
It's coming out of our pockets.
And all that pollution, the ponds that the waste had to go into by law, all of a sudden those overflowed
into the
waterways.
Oh, God, yeah.
Oh, goody. You know, let me have some of that water.
Yeah, so then we got to talk about subsidies.
Well, I know, subsidies. Well, you are listening to Your Health right here at 94.7 WPVC, the voice of resistance right here in Charlottesville. And we're going to take a little break, but we will be back. All right, we are back. This is MC Blair and my co-host Michael Riley. We are here on 94.7 WPVC, and the show is called To Your Health every Saturday morning from 11 to 12. We're talking about the true cost of food, and we talked a little bit about how obesity costs us $2 trillion globally in healthcare costs. The subsidies, you were saying earlier, Michael, and insurance to farmers in the United States cost taxpayers $20 billion a year right here. And then you have antibiotic resistance, superbugs coming up because they feed the animals all those antibiotics to keep them healthy, well, to keep them not sick. They're not really healthy. Yeah. But when they're crammed in next to each other and walking in their own poo all day long, they need antibiotics. And that goes into us when we eat it, and therefore less resistance to antibiotics when we need them. Or I should say the bugs have resistance to antibiotics when we need them to work, and they just don't work with us. Also, the endocrine disrupting chemicals found in pesticides cost billions in healthcare costs. And then something that some people don't realize, the low wages paid by companies like these fast food, like McDonald's, cost us $153 billion a year in government assistance program to the workers that don't make enough with, that's another cost that people don't understand. At a later date, I'd really like to get into what Jamie Oliver from England is doing in their schools and in towns. Mm. It's amazing. And he strictly talks about the obesity and type 2 diabetes as the really huge cost of food that isn't accounted for. And he's doing he's actually doing something really, really big with the schools. It's amazing.
Oh, really? Yeah.
It's absolutely amazing.
I haven't seen that, but yeah.
Yeah, he's very passionate about what he does, and sometimes he rubs people the wrong way.
Yeah, well, you have to. You have to make change. There's no doubt about
it's
it. You have to ruffle feathers, and you know, when you look at the size of the food industry and the money and the power, they get their feathers ruffled, and they certainly have the influence to squash the voices out there. But the more that we can collectively speak up and make more people and consumers aware of these issues, then the tide will turn, because ultimately it's all about the consumer. What consumers demand, consumers ultimately will get in a capitalist society, and we just have to continue to speak out against these issues. And just kind of getting back to the subsidies, because people do need to understand what role what was the figure on the subsidies?
$20 billion a year.
$20 billion a year we pay in taxpayer dollars to subsidize our industrial food system, and most of that goes through our commodity crop system. And so, for those who don't know, the way this works, in essence, really, in this short amount of time, to sort of distill it down, is that farmers out there, mostly in the Corn Belt, growing corn and soybeans and wheat, which are the biggest subsidized crops, along with cotton for apparel. But they grow these crops, and they're encouraged to produce and to grow as much as they can, again, through a system that relies on genetically modified seeds and a lot of chemical fertilizers, pesticides. And then when the price isn't set by the farmer like our farmers down at City Market who can pretty much decide what price they want to charge for their food.
Right.
The price is set by commodity traders at on Wall Street and the Chicago Board of the Chicago Merck. And so those farmers who are producing all these commodity crops, which go into the factory meat system and into processed food, when they don't get the price that they need to cover their costs, the government steps in with their insurance program and in essence subsidizes those farmers. And this is a program that's been it actually dates back to the first farm bill, which off the top of my head I want to say it was during FDR's presidency as a way to help farmers coming out of the Great Depression. So 1933,
yes, yeah,
I think it was,
yeah,
the first farm bill.
Yeah, basically guaranteed.
And every five years,
floor.
The farm bill is renewed, right. And the sort of the crux of the farm bill is a subsidized system that subsidizes these crops and these commodity crops, which we grow just massive. The corn is field corn, which is the corn that is not eaten necessarily directly by humans, but consumed in feedlots and used for processed food and used for ethanol. That's also a big, where the ethanol industry has become a big part of that picture as well. And so this cost that we pay, $20 billion a year, it's unbelievable. And if you look at this from a more equitable standpoint and you take that $20 billion a year and you reallocate just a fraction of that toward some of these local family sustainable farmers who are doing the right thing and producing nutrient dense food that's not going to give us chronic disease and not going to degrade the environment, then you really start understanding what can be done, because there are naysayers out there that say we can't feed the world, and we could get into this whole
feed
the world discussion, because that's a huge part of this.
How are we going to
feed the world, right?
You're right.
That's the mantra that is thrown about by the industrial food system.
If we could get those subsidies turned around and go into the local areas, the farmers would have enough to pay decent wages to their interns, mm-hmm. to their staff. I was talking with one of the local farmers last week and said, the local farms, they can pay a living wage and all this. And my farmer looked at me and said, Well, I got to be honest with you. I want to pay a living wage. If we paid the $14 or $15 an hour that, you know, it takes to really sustain a person or a family, we would be out of business. And so they need those subsidies. They really do. It would be great if we could turn that around.
I mean, you know, a local farmer here who has invested, you hear it time and time again about these, a local organic, you know, eco farmer that is growing crops or whatever, and you know, for one reason or another, Mother Nature always has the upper hand, and whether it's, you know, drought that we're in now or pests or something that that impacts their crops and their, you know, their livelihood, it's really frustrating.
It is.
They don't have a fallback. They just kind of, you know, they most of them got, you know, they're just so amazing. They're so resilient, and they just kind of move. A lot of them just kind of move on, and, you know, it's time to move on. But imagine if they had that safety net. If the government would step in and say, okay, you know, you had a drought, and or, you know, let's say a hailstorm came in and wiped out your tomato crop. Imagine those subsidies, again, just a portion of the subsidies coming in and helping those farmers.
Yeah.
What a difference it would make.
It would.
Right? I mean, it would be night
absolutely
and day.
Would.
Yeah,
I know.
Absolutely
it would be. And you know, we talk about the health care costs. Well, there was a study, and this is amazing, Michael. They say some argue that they've been consuming pesticide-laden produce for decades, and they feel just fine, right? But the symptoms aren't always obvious. There was a study that interviewed, is over a 20-year study, and they interviewed over 84,000 farmers and their spouses, documenting an overwhelming amount of data in favor of the connection between eating the factory-farmed, you know, with pesticides and all that, and depression.
Mm-hmm.
Now, depression is... 300 million people worldwide suffer from depression.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's the population of our country.
The cholesterol. You know, yeah. the two most highly prescribed medications are for cholesterol and for depression. Hundreds of millions of prescriptions written every year for those two medications.
I know. And it's almost like, maybe we need to keep these people sick so we, the drug companies, can make a boatload, you know. But I don't believe that. I don't think it's that nefarious. I think the people themselves, I don't think they're sitting around, you know, you know, I can't believe that.
Yeah.
But since
there's some of this
industry, this whole industry on pharmaceuticals written to counteract the health problems due to us eating food that we shouldn't be eating.
Yeah, it's a huge industry. There's a lot more money to be made writing prescriptions and treating sickness than there is, you know, treating well people. You and I, let's face it. I mean, I know you and I are like-minded and have similar experiences, and it's why we're so passionate about this.
Yes.
Because we have both benefited, and I think, you know, we have recognized the positive benefits of living and eating a certain way, and you know, we've talked about this, right? I mean, we both focus obviously on what we eat, and I know personally for me, my health care costs are negligible. I mean, you know, that's not to say that we're let's face it, we're not in control. None of us are in control of our own lives, and so you know, you can't be too arrogant about it. And
that's true.
But the truth of the matter is that in the last 5 to 10 years of my life, as I've focused on staying away from as much processed and industrial produced food as possible, my health care costs are virtually nothing. I mean, I used to get headaches all the time, and I don't even take. I'm lucky if maybe I take an Advil maybe 2 or 3 times a year, and even at that.
That's wild.
And I don't have to, you know, go to the doctor. I don't get sick. I haven't had a flu shot in 15 years. I don't get the flu. I barely even get head colds. And when I do, they're usually, you know, maybe a day long at the most. And, you know, again, that's not, you know, I don't want to ever be too too overconfident. I always preface by saying I understand. I won't get into anything about faith or anything like that, but I understand that my life is not in my hands. But to a certain degree, decisions we make do have positive outcomes or negative outcomes.
Exactly.
And so we have to focus on that.
It's true. Yeah. It's true. So, you know, on these chemicals, it was amazing. They said that 30 out of 37 popular pesticides either blocked or mimicked male hormones. Mm-hmm. So that's what everybody needs, more male hormones, right?
Yeah. I think
that's there's a reason why those are banned in sports, you know, because the naturally produced ones are just enough, you know.
Yeah.
We don't need to be adding any of these things. And they said they're widely used on strawberries and lettuce.
Yeah.
The two big the two big culprits there. Not saying don't eat strawberries or lettuce, but just make sure it's locally regeneratively grown, if you will. And of course, they're saying organic, and I understand that, because if it's organic, then supposedly it's pesticide or herbicide free, and that's pretty important.
Yeah,
but they. You know, eating fresh organic produce is the healthiest choice you can make for you and your family.
Yeah.
Extremely, extremely important. So we covered the low wages. What about the, the truth? The market is distorted in favor of those who produce food unsustainably.
Yeah.
While those who farm in environmentally sustainable and socially responsible, regenerative, organic way generally find themselves bearing the additional costs of doing so.
Yeah.
Right? And intensive large-scale farmers, on the other hand, are propped up by subsidies, just like we said.
Yeah.
Our tax dollars going to the pockets of corporate types who could care less and who do not have to account for most of the damage they cause.
Well, yeah. You know, we touched on it just a few moments ago. I think for many, many years, there was just, you know, we sort of, as a culture, I think, existed somewhat oblivious to a lot of these issues. Most people, well, let's face it, they've been out there. In fact, I just finished reading Silent Spring by Rachel Carson. I don't know if you read that book, but it was written by Rachel Carson, who is an environmentalist, almost 60 years ago. I think she published in 1962, and she was writing about these issues then, about the risk of pesticides and already the impact that they were seeing on human health and environmental health and ecological health and all that. So they're out there. But I think it was on the fringe. And I think what's fantastic now is that it's moving off the fringe into sort of mainstream society. And clearly it's why we are seeing, Purdue. I just saw Purdue chicken on a commercial the other day talking about their organic chicken and antibiotic free. So it's mainstream, no doubt about that. But it still has a long way to go. And the industrial food system, their mantra, their way to keep people in line here, I guess, for lack of a better term, is by claiming or by repeating over and over, how are we going to feed the world? And I get that from people all the time. How are we going to feed the world? How are we going to feed the world? I mean, we've got, you know, over 7 billion people here and growing, right, apparently. And how are we going to feed them? And, you know, that is it's a myth, really. I think when you really look at some of the research that I brought in today to help back that up can really illustrate what a myth that is. I think first and foremost, the amount of food that we do produce through this industrial system, primarily in the developing countries, it's all in the developing countries, but primarily in the United States, is really not going to the people that necessarily need it in the developing world. United States and European countries. And so we waste about 40% of the food we produce.
Yeah.
So it's really our industrial food system.
Another cost.
It's really just another, it's just another cost. And it's just another, I think, example of sort of our wasteful culture, consumer culture. It's like, we want it cheap, we want it easy. And, you know, hey, if I don't eat it, I just throw it away, whatever, no big deal. And restaurants, we have so many restaurants out there, more than we really need, and there's tremendous amount of waste in the restaurant industry. And so,
well,
so a lot
having
of
been in the food service industry and doing a you know, my fair share of catering jobs, and we would have food left over, I would be allowed to give some to the staff. But I got to tell you, sometimes not enough people showed up, and I would have trays of food. And the health department, and rightfully so, if the food has actually been out on the line where people have gone by and taken, you know, what they need and all that, if that food is left over, that has to be thrown away because it was put out in the public. If you happen to have some unopened pans in your hot boxes that are left over and you haven't put them on the line, those can in fact be given away to the say the halfway houses here in Charlottesville. I know I gave quite a bit to On Your Own, which is a halfway house up there on I think it's Fourth Street. You're doing a great job out there, by the way, guys. Thank you. Keep it up. And, you know, so I was able to give them some of the food. But most of the time, you do have to throw it away because of the possible making somebody sick. You know, it was out of temperature too long or for whatever reasons.
Yeah.
So, you know, it is difficult to give that away.
Well, yeah, and I think there's also, you know, an inherent transformation in your attitude toward food when you really do understand what amount of effort is put into it. And I think my family sometimes gets a little irritated with me because, I admit I was one of those careless consumers for many years.
Right.
You need something, toss it away or whatever. But now, having spent so much time around so many wonderful farmers that work so hard, and you understand what exactly does go into producing good food and the sacrifices that are made, you have a different attitude about it. You want to consume every last bit of it, and if there is some left over, you know, compost it or something, give it back to the earth. That's how we work. You know, we talk
right
about regeneration here, and that's a big thing. But I pulled up last night a report that I had first come across several years ago, and this is just for our audience. We need to take a break.
We'll get right back to it. That's a great teaser, as they say. A cool report pulled up by Michael Riley. He pulled that up last night, and we'll get right into it after this break. And we are back right here to Your Health on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. And Michael, you had a report that you had dialed in.
Yeah, MC, I came across this last night, and I'd first read it several years ago. This is a report produced by the United Nations Conference on Trade and Development, and it was produced in 2013. And you know, I like to reference some of these things just because sometimes, you know, people need to understand that when you and I talk about things, we're not just pulling these things out of thin air, that we do try to back them up as much as we can, as much as, you know, we don't have all the information right in our head and at our fingertips. But so I just want to read this report. It's actually 120 pages. I'm not going to read 120 pages by any means, but first page, there are key messages, and there are about six key messages on this page. And the very first one speaks to this whole issue about feeding the world and the misrepresentation that's out there. And so I'm going to read this because I think it's really poignant. It says, the 2008 food crisis, which is referring to African food crisis in 2008, was an important catalyst for realizing the need for a fundamental transformation and questioning some of the assumptions that had driven food, agriculture, and trade policy in recent decades. However, actual results achieved since 2008 suggest that a paradigm shift has started but is largely incomplete. Priority remains heavily focused on increasing industrial agriculture production, mostly under the slogan, growing more food at less cost to the environment. The perception that there is a supply side productivity problem is, however, questionable. Hunger and malnutrition are mainly related to lack of purchasing power and or inability of rural rural poor to be self-sufficient. Meeting the food security challenge is thus primarily about empowerment of the poor and their food sovereignty. Furthermore, the current demand trends for biofuels, concentrate animal feed, excessive meat-based diets, and post-harvest food waste are regarded as given rather than challenging their rational. So it's kind of a little bit, you know, a little highbrow, of course, the United Nations, but it does speak to this issue that the problem of feeding the world is not about producing this low-cost industrial food, most of which just goes to the bottom line of big corporations in the United States,
right,
and does little for those who need it in developing countries. There's another report that I just read, and it came out last week, and it was by the World Food Program. And it shows that, again, this underscores this issue that the world's poor are not, it's not access to food. It's not, supply of food is not the issue. It's poverty and it's the ability to, you know, to feed themselves. And so they did this study that showed that basically a meal that in New York, you know, basic meal of rice and beans that cost $1.20 would have a price tag of $320 in South Sudan, which is basically, you know, it's almost like they're, you know, it's like, I think I'm looking for the percentage of what their daily wages are, but it's, I mean, you can, it's almost their, you know, monthly wage for many of those people. And
why is that? Do you think it's because the supply is low? Obviously, the supply is non-existent over there, so therefore to get the food, you have to pay so much more.
Exactly,
for it.
Exactly. I mean, so there are a lot of issues. You know, when you're looking at the supply, there's distribution. You know, they don't have the distribution system that we have in the developed world in the United States, and so you have issues there. You have issues regarding, you know, refrigeration, lack of refrigeration, a lot of spoilage, and you know, there's unfortunately, there's just a lot of, you know, there's probably just a lot of gaming of the system. And, you know, there's definitely, you know, you hate to say that there's outright malfeasance, but I'm sure there's plenty of that, too.
Oh, I'm sure.
And so really what this comes down to is that the best way for people to feed themselves, best way for people to overcome poverty and hunger is to be able to feed themselves. And
right.
So, you know, helping. And that's, I think, what we're doing in pockets around the world. There, it's just, I come across these stories all the time about organizations that are out there helping bring information to people's in developing countries and helping them understand how to farm sustainably and how to feed themselves.
And it's funny, it all, you know, starts with, obviously, with soil and then fresh water. We have a favorite son here in Charlottesville, Chris Long. Philadelphia Eagles.
Absolutely.
And his brother Kyle. But they're doing some wonderful things, bringing fresh water to developing nations, third world countries, drilling wells.
They are.
I mean, the water's there.
Yeah.
And they're drilling these wells, and these people are just, oh, man, thank you. So, I mean, it's just insane, you know, to see these people's, the smiles on their faces when that water comes up, and it's, there you go, you know, and they drill these wells all over, and they're doing a wonderful, wonderful thing. So I'm thinking that the agriculture will definitely follow that. You know, once they have that fresh water, then obviously their health will improve, and they'll be able to, you know, get growing and produce their own food.
Yeah,
you know, with the real water. So, so thanks, Chris. You guys are doing a great job.
Yeah, and actually, there's a blog. He wrote a blog on the Juice Laundry. Juice Laundry has a blog which I contribute to quite frequently.
Oh, okay.
And so, anybody wants to read about what Chris is doing, go to the Juice Laundry, which is a great business, by the way, 100% organic.
Oh, good.
Here in town, they've got two locations: one on the corner and one over on Preston Avenue, and then one up in D.C. But they have a blog, and Chris wrote a blog about what what he's doing recently. And that's how I know about it.
So that's great. By the way, I ran into Angelo from Ivy Inn down at the City Market today. He was at the Broadhead Mountain Farm. I was buying 20 pounds of broccoli so that I could take that home and blanch it and then vacuum seal it and freeze it, you know, after it's dried and whatnot, so that I'll have local broccoli through the winter, which is great, always fun. But I ran into Angelo. I'd never met him before at the Ivy Inn. So you guys want to eat local and some good food? Well, that's a place that is participating in the local food movement in a big way.
Yeah, without a doubt. And I'm going to sign off, MC.
Yep,
we'll look forward to taking care.
Got family duties.
Yeah, again,
great.
This weekend.
Good,
yeah.
Always good to
Saturday.
See you, Michael.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Look forward to
thank you.
See you right next week.
Yeah,
yep.
All right. Yeah, you're listening to Your Health right here at 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. And I was talking more. I was talking about the... you know, some of the subsidies going to the pockets of the corporate types who could care less. They don't have to account for most of the damage they cause in producing their so-called cheap food and the raping of our soil. That's so important to keep our soil healthy, and unfortunately, their methods are anti-health for the soil. And they purposely add casein to most processed foods to addict their customers, which, of course, I said before, it's the exact behavior of the cigarette companies who were found guilty and had to pay a multi-billion dollar settlement. Thank goodness, you know. It's crazy. And then I was talking about the chemicals causing depression. Are you kidding me? Yeah, that's what we just want to know. How eating the factory food system, so-called food, is adding to the mass depression that people suffer and then have to be prescribed tons of drugs for. They said the EPA has expanded its endocrine disruptor screening program, requiring more than 200 chemicals in food and drinking water be tested for endocrine disruption. Unfortunately, the program isn't designed to ban those disruptors from being used. Instead, it's just designed to assess and manage the risks of their use. It's still up to you, the consumer. Got to choose organic, or if not organic, you know your farmer doesn't use the pesticides or herbicides, and they are sustainably or regeneratively growing their food. And that's, you know, that's somebody that you want to buy when or buy from. Eating conventional produce grown with pesticides and insecticides is no different than slowly poisoning yourself every day by taking a few drops of Roundup under your tongue. Yeah, that's what I want. The only difference is the delivery method. And as I said, eating fresh, organic, or regeneratively grown produce is the healthiest choice that you can make for you and your family. And now I'm going to get into my two-minute drill, I like to call it, while we wrap this thing up. Now, we've been hearing on To Your Health and from other sources that the demand for organic food is growing and eating organic food is healthier because chemical fertilizers, pesticides, herbicides, insecticides are not used. Now we hear the toxic administration in Washington might deregulate what organic is and what it's not, leaving you, our dear listeners, and me too, in a wasteland of confusion about what to believe. Now, as the weeks roll by with Twitter storms erupting daily, nobody knows what to expect from our federal government. And quite frankly, reading the news can lead to a stress overload. And we know stress can lead to early heart, digestive, and brain problems, along with all those chemicals. Can't we all just get along? Well, the answer is yes, we can. Community-based agriculture brings us together and provides a common ground between folks from different cultures and backgrounds. It strengthens and gives voice to people who, before now, had none. And most importantly, it provides the healthy food we crave and need for our bodies and gives food access to those who would not normally have it because they're working with the community, helping raise the food that they and their families will eat. Now, just imagine if we could feed all or most of our local population with real food and not be dependent on outside political or corporate forces for our nutrition. That would be nice, right? Because the profit-only motivation of corporate food is keeping us sick, and it drives the true cost of food to unsustainable levels. That's very, very important. All this true cost, we talk the health care cost, it to unsustainable levels. Now, imagine life with 70% less copays or more for the doctor's visits because we're healthier. Very few incidences of hours lost due to sick days. Wow. Your bosses would like that. They say a life with more energy and increased production at work, leading to less stress and maybe some promotions or pay raises. These rewards can be achieved by supporting programs like City Schoolyard Gardens or Urban Agricultural Collective of Charlottesville and the other programs within the Food Justice Network. I urge you to give your time and or money to many of the Food Justice Network organizations. You can start your journey to a healthier, rewarding life. Now, thanks for listening. And my heartfelt thank you to Michael Riley, my new co-host. And remember, eating real food, wearing a smile, and keeping a positive attitude are keys to your health.
You've been listening to Your Health with your host, MC Blair. To Your Health is brought to you by Hamilton's at First and Main, celebrating 20 years of sustainable fine dining on the downtown mall. Be listening again next Saturday at 11 for To Your Health. The show is produced by Ben Chambers, production assistance from Mike Friend.